Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. I'm Mike Derwer, and joining me now is Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, I hope you got rocks in your pockets because it's going to get windy up there today.
Yeah, we've had a few days already this week, or over at least the last 7 days, of serious winds. Last Wednesday was really bad, and then on Sunday it was windy again. Tuesday, here we're back at it. So it's kind of too early for the spring winds that we often get around the state, but we're alternating between kind of seasonable weather and cold and sometimes snowy weather. So it's we'll see how this spring is. Hopefully it calms down. We have a calmer spring than we have the late winter.
Boy, no doubt about that. On Sunday, you had 75-mile-an-hour wind gusts up there. We had 75 up in the Sacramento Mountains also. Did a lot of damage to the Otero County infrastructure up there. They're working on it, getting people back on. So we'll see what it brings in the next few days. So, well, Paul, yep. I tell you what, the Department of Energy says COVID, says COVID most likely came from lab leak. Why the Department of Energy, first of all, Paul?
You never, I don't know. I actually was listening to a news story and they were talking about this and they said that because of the Department of Energy, interestingly enough, being the repository within the federal government for the national labs, and the national labs having their expertise, even though this is obviously a virus, not an energy issue per se, that's what they use to get to the bottom of this. And yeah, it's just another indicator that a lot of the folks who had, you know, you could call them conspiracy theories, but These weren't conspiracy theories because they have been proven right by and large. And this one was, the lab leak theory now has been said to be the likeliest way that the COVID-19 pandemic began over in Wuhan, China, which, of course, Wuhan is the home to China's major bio tech lab, and it likely escaped from there. Something that, you know, from the earliest days of the pandemic was talked about. A lot of media outlets really tried to counter that, say that it was some guy biting a head off of a bat or some kind of crazy story back in those days. But, you know, it just shows that people who were skeptics of the media narrative and the political narrative all along on COVID have been proven right time and time again. You know, everything from masks, which we just talked about recently, to the origins of COVID-19, to the impact on our children from the schools being shut down and businesses from being shut down. A lot of folks were saying stuff like this early and often within the pandemic, and were not only ignored or told that they were crazy or that they didn't know what they were talking about, but they were prohibited from even stating some of these things on social media outlets and in other media outlets. And if you're not skeptical of what the media and the politicians are saying these days, you're the one who's out to lunch. It's just the latest. It's not that we haven't kind of talked about this, but for the government to acknowledge that, yeah, that's probably what happened, I think is a pretty big deal. So wanted to make sure to talk about that.
Well, if it was a guy biting the head off of a bat, well, that was 40 years ago with Ozzy Osbourne, and that kind of explains Ozzy Osbourne now. So, but anyways, yeah, we were all right. So, hey, it's interesting. So, no doubt about that. It just proves everybody was right. Well, Paul, New Mexico should reduce corporate income tax, not shift them. You know, if you want to be business friendly and put people to work, that's what you need to do, is reduce corporate income tax.
This would be certainly one way that make New Mexico a more business-friendly state, and HB 322 is what I'm talking about. Now, tax bills, just so people understand the way things work up in Santa Fe, if you're putting a bill out to raise taxes or lower taxes, generally speaking, they table it in the House Tax Committee, and then right about now, they will be working to put together a final tax package. And of course, with $3.6 billion sitting on the table, there's going to be a fairly significant tax package. We've talked about the gross receipts tax. We've talked about a lot of other good and bad opportunities for tax policy changes. HB 322 is a Republican bill. It's Representative Jason Harper's bill. He is introducing it with a co-sponsor, Mo Maestas, and you know, corporate income taxes in New Mexico are a relatively small component of the budget. I just mentioned that we have a $3.6 billion surplus. In any given year, you get about $300 to $400 million in corporate tax revenues, so relatively small amounts. And it's charged currently at a rate for really small businesses under $500,000 in revenue. It's charged at, I believe, 4.8%. That rate goes up for bigger businesses to 5.9%. So ultimately, 322 is raising the tax rate, because what they're doing is eliminating that lower rate, charging everybody 5.9%. Now, there's other changes made in the bill, but ultimately, in the midst of a massive budget surplus, there's still serious talk about raising the tax burden. Now, this obviously, the corporate tax is not a huge component of New Mexico's overall taxation structure. Interestingly enough, if you go into the budget documents online, the corporate tax is where they take out the film subsidy. So in the when the state of New Mexico pays its film subsidy, you'll see a line item close to the corporate income tax, you know, that essentially reduces the revenue. So any given year, you'll see $150 or so million reducing the corporate income tax revenue. So the state actually gets even less money from the corporate income tax because of the film subsidies. But the overall point is that this isn't a big problem for the state at this point. They should just consider abolishing or at least phasing down the corporate income tax if, as the legislators say, that they want to make New Mexico a more business-friendly state. They can certainly afford it. There's no need to monkey around with raising some rates, changing the sales factor, et cetera, et cetera. Now, obviously, that gets into the personal income tax, and you know, you're going to have a political problem if you reduce the rate on corporations and you keep it in place on individuals, and I get that, but there's no reason you can't reduce both and move towards phasing out both, and that'll really diversify the economy, but that's just not really being considered seriously in the legislature. We'll be very happy if we get the gross receipts tax reform, and we'll have to hopefully come back and see if we can do income taxes of both kinds in a future legislative session.
Now we'll see what happens with that. Well, one thing going through that is creating some controversy within Chambers of Commerce and other folks is the Senate Bill 11, the paid leave bill. And according to what I've got here, according to the bill, both workers and employers would have to pay into the Family Medical Leave Act. And, you know, and then earlier it states that it's a strain on the workforce, you know, the poor workforce and stuff. So let's talk about Senate Bill 11.
Yes, Senate Bill 11 is now awaiting a vote in the New Mexico Senate. It's 12 weeks of paid leave,
mm-hmm.
and it is theoretically both the employer and the employee who have to pay into the plan. In the case of employees, it's supposed to be 0.5% of your pay and 0.4% from the employer. And the idea is that there's a fund available then through the state to back up employers when they have employees go out on leave. And there's a lot of concern about whether this fund is actually going to be able to survive financially. There's going to be enough money in it that you'll have to come back and impose additional extractions, if you will, on employees and employers alike, or what that'll look like. It's definitely one of the bills that could make this a economically harmful session, despite all the revenues available to the state and the possibility of real good tax reform happening. SB 11, the paid leave, could really hinder businesses. And this, it goes to really small businesses. The amount of employees you need is, I believe it's as little as 5, which is a pretty small business. So it's this is definitely a piece of legislation that has some legs. Interestingly enough, the governor has not so far said whether she supports it or not, which could be a saving grace of this legislation. If the governor doesn't want to see this happen, doesn't want to see the businesses harmed by this, she might either veto the whole thing or take out her pen and veto parts of it. I'm not saying that'll happen, but I do think the governor has taken a new tack after the election. I think she was maybe pushing on the progressive side a little bit harder, and we'll see where she comes down on this. She, like I said, she hasn't taken a position yet, so we'll see what the Senate does. If and when the Senate gets scheduled for a vote, I think they'll pass it. Then what happens in the House, and then ultimately with the governor and her prospective signature. But this is one of the real challenging bills that we see out there.
Well, it cleared the Senate Finance Committee on party lines, and now it heads to the floor for the next round of it. So we'll
actually, a Democrat, George Munoz, opposed it in Senate.
Oh, really?
So it did pass, but by a single vote. And that also has to raise questions, I think, the fact that you did have a prominent Democrat, the chair of that committee, coming out and opposing it. George Munoz, there's really no conservative Democrats in the legislature. There's what I would call moderate and the hardcore progressives, and Munoz is on the moderate side. If he'd really been a conservative Democrat, he would have avoided really pushing the thing through Senate Finance, as John Arthur Smith used to do. But he gave it a vote, and it managed to get through over his no vote. But yeah, we'll see. This is one of those really troubling bills out there.
Oh, yes, it is, no doubt. Well, Paul, we've talked about how Mississippi improved education, and now the Albuquerque Journal did an article about it. That ought to raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, well, the Albuquerque Journal, you know, it's, I look back at the Heirs of Enchantment, our blog that we update regularly, and we are always talking about new ideas and new information. I was writing about Mississippi's educational success back in, I believe, May of 2021. So, here we are in almost March of 2023. So the journal is better late than never. But, from the fold, they were talking about in an article the reforms Mississippi had enacted. Obviously asking the question, what is New Mexico doing or not doing to follow along with Mississippi's reforms. Specifically, the way the journal frames it, I think, is that there are ongoing investments in early childhood reading. I think Mississippi really had a lot more intense focus on it. You know, it's one thing to put some resources towards early childhood reading and teaching teachers to do it, but it's another thing to make it a cause of state policymakers. You know, we've seen such turnover in the PED here in New Mexico, and such a lack of direction and focus. And then, not to mention, of course, COVID. It's just been a real disaster here in New Mexico. And you haven't heard the governor say, we're going to really hyper-focus on early childhood reading. She has done nothing of the sort. And of course, the final thing, Mississippi did a concerted effort to stop social promotion. So if you couldn't read by fourth grade, you weren't going to pass beyond fourth grade. And the unions here in New Mexico stridently opposed that effort, that initiative that Mississippi has successfully used. So, it's good to see coverage there. Unfortunately, we're really not seeing the political support here in New Mexico. And I think that's a direct function of the unions and their involvement. And the unions are quoted throughout the article. I believe it was last Wednesday. So folks who don't read the Albuquerque Journal regularly, but they are interested in this, you can go to the journal's website, just plug in Mississippi into the search bar. Or you can go to heirsofenchantment.com, and I wrote a whole piece about it, including links, going back to last week. So folks can check that out. But yeah, something that's really had a major impact. And as we know, the unions, again, aren't going to go for educational choice and kind of the bold reforms that we really would like to see. And those have been bottled up in the legislative session, which, of course, this is a Democrat-controlled state. The Democratic Party is controlled by the unions, so we're not going to see that kind of reform. But we would love to see some positive efforts like what Mississippi's done. And again, the unions, I think, it's safe to say, are the leading obstacle to that.
Well, you can almost say that the unions for education are standing in the middle, preventing real education opportunities and real educational choices and real educational learning here in New Mexico.
You could do more than almost say that. I think you could say that. Again, this is, I sometimes don't mention this, but just because the union do something doesn't mean I'm blaming individual teachers.
Right.
There's a lot of great individual teachers in New Mexico, and my kids had them up until the COVID pandemic, and then we were very frustrated, again, because the unions, not that the governor needed any encouragement or David Scrace, but they were moving things towards closures and lockdowns and that kind of stuff, and that doesn't mean that all the teachers supported that or that all the teachers support what the union does. But the unions are a big political force in this state, and when they collect those dues, even if it's from a good teacher, they put those dues to political activism and activities that do wind up hurting our kids. And that's just the reality of the political system we're dealing with, and the fact that these public sector unions exist in the first place.
Well, when you get teachers or administrators that push political activism within schools, Alamogordo found out they lost a superintendent because of it.
Yeah. Well, thankfully they did that. That was something that they were wise to tell him goodbye. Hopefully he's permanently eliminated.
You betcha. Well, Project Veritas exposes Albuquerque public schools. What's going on with that one?
Yeah, another, much like the Alamogordo superintendent recently was caught on a hidden video. This really seems to be the way nowadays that news is broken, is that you get somebody in a situation where they feel like they're just able to speak their mind, who's either with a government agency, government bureaucracy, or some kind of major private corporation like Pfizer, the drug company. In this case, Project Veritas, which that is how they do business. They get folks who are in positions of power, often corrupted, and get them to say things on camera. And unfortunately, the mainstream media, you haven't seen an Albuquerque Journal write up on this. You haven't seen a lot of coverage on your evening news channels, on the local news here, even though I think this is very newsworthy. But Project Veritas talked to a woman who handles essentially kind of gender issues at the district. And there's a few, I think, highlights or lowlights, if you will, of this. One is that students in the district can simply announce one day that they are the opposite gender and proceed using that restroom. So if little Johnny goes to school, has never indicated at all that they identify as a female or they don't wear a dress or skirt or whatever, and they just decide that they want to use the girls' bathroom, they are allowed to under Albuquerque Public Schools policy. It seems to me that there could be some creative young boys out there that might take advantage of this policy, but that's something that'll be the stuff of lawsuits down the road here. Also, all APS staff, Albuquerque Public Schools staff, according to this video, must use the student's preferred pronoun. So, really, whatever, you could. It's one thing for a boy to say that you want to call him a she or a her. It's another thing for these goofball pronouns that some people are putting out on social media, horses and tigers and bears, G and Jer and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, allegedly, according to the video, and this is a person in position to know at the district, that is supposedly what they're forced to do at the school. And then finally, the kids who do claim that they want to transition from one gender to the other, they are able to do that at the school, and their parents will not be informed of it. So some pretty frightening stuff. Again, seems newsworthy to me. Sadly, I didn't see much out of the mainstream media on this, but Project Veritas is doing more journalism than pretty much the rest of the mainstream media combined. So kudos to them for coming here to Albuquerque and shining a light on what's going on. And I can assure you that I sent this to some school board members here, and we're going to see what the district has in store. But as I mentioned, pre-pandemic, my kids were going to traditional Albuquerque public schools. That is not going to happen anytime in the near future, thanks to information like this.
Oh, absolutely. And this is just one example of government saying your children are our responsibility now, and you don't need to be notified of what we're going to do with them.
Yeah, and this really ties in, I think, nicely to the hit video of the Alamogordo Public Schools superintendent. It's not even just, while it is significantly the gender aspect of the issue, it is also the incredible arrogance of these supposed public servants, these people who are supposed to be carrying out of the will of the people on the taxpayer dime, that they're instead undertaking efforts all across race and gender and all kinds of other political issues to undermine parental authority and to transform the children into good little Marxists, not to actually do what they're supposed to do, which is to educate them on basic, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, history, et cetera. And it just, you know, when you give to the government an inch, it takes 5 miles. And that's kind of been my mentality for a long time, Mike. But, boy, it just seems to get worse and worse. And it's so hard to keep, to hold government accountable these days. But that's where we are.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's not just gender stuff. It's sexually explicit literature as well, and we can touch on that another time. So, well, you got a question mark on this one, so I'll ask it as that. Medicaid for most New Mexicans?
Yeah, another bill in the roundhouse, HB 400, had a hearing yesterday in its first committee. The idea is to further expand Medicaid in the state of New Mexico. In this case, residents with incomes greater than 133% of the federal poverty level and less than 400% of the federal poverty level would have access to Medicaid. I noted, and we've talked about how December report from the Legislative Finance Committee found an astonishing 47% of all New Mexicans were on the government welfare program, and 77% of live births are on Medicaid. This is just another effort, HB 400, to further expand Medicaid. It's only really 5.7% more of the population, but you do the math, 47% plus 5.7, that gets you above 50% of the state population. So, you know, there are plans afoot to try to put a majority of New Mexico's citizens on this federal welfare program. So it's it's just another step to get us all tied into accepting government welfare programs as a day-to-day thing. And that's been an agenda item for the far left in this country for a very long time, and it's just showing how they continue to do that in New Mexico. I don't know if this bill is going to pass, but HB 400 is definitely one of the many bills we're concerned with right now.
Well, absolutely. When you come to that government-funded health care, all you got to do is go to Cuba, Russia, anywhere that's socialist, and you'll find those are the worst healthcare systems in the world.
Yeah, well, those are also communist countries that have a lot of poverty. New Mexico's healthcare system, like the rest of the U.S., is pretty heavily socialized, actually, between all of the federal programs, Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, a lot of different programs combined to put a lot of people in this country and here in New Mexico, especially, on government programs for their health care. And one of the reasons that we have such a medical provider shortage in this state is definitely our high Medicaid population and heavy reliance on those government programs. So it's a multi-tiered problem that, you know, every time I hear somebody on the other, you know, on the other political side say, oh, you know, we need to do socialized medicine in New Mexico or in the United States because, you know, look how great those systems are and look how terrible ours are. Well, our system is nothing like a free market in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And if you want to, you know, give up the opportunity to go to your doctor of choice and go to get the services you need when you feel you need them, single payer will do great with that. You'll have even less access to necessary health care. That may be okay when you have a cold or the sniffles, but when you're dealing with cancer and other diseases, it doesn't work out very well.
Well, absolutely. You can just go back into, I think it was the 90s when a young boy over in England, they would not operate him on him for his cancer, so they brought him to the United States, and we did it.
Oh, yeah, that happens more often than you think. Maybe not getting the service they need, but definitely people who are denied basic life-saving care in some of these socialized medical systems. So, my view is we would like to go the opposite direction in American healthcare. There's still states out there who do not accept the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And, nobody's done a definitive study showing that those states have suffered worse health care outcomes than the states that expanded it. New Mexico, the Legislative Finance Committee, did not even contemplate whether we improved health care outcomes thanks to the Medicaid expansion. So it's definitely an open question. And I think the states like Texas and Florida that did not expand are some of the most vibrant states where people are moving to. Clearly mm-hmm. not states that people are fleeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on this next one, I just had this picture of in my head of President Biden leaning into the microphone and saying, 9,000 unused oil permits.
Yeah. If the guy wasn't the president of the United States, you would just ignore his lies and misstatements. But when the president repeats and states that the oil and gas industry has 9,000 unused permits that they can still access, he, of course, is making things up. The number's closer to 6,700, which is a lot, but actually the real issue isn't even how many permits they have available or not available. It's how much more difficult this administration has attempted to make it for the oil and gas industry to do business. But the 9,000 unused permits number touted by the Biden administration repeatedly, certainly when oil prices were high, very high. They're still pretty high, but they're not over, $4, $4.50. So they were not accurate in that particular data point. And I think it's worth noting that, especially given that New Mexico is the second biggest oil producing state in the entire mm-hmm. union. We actually rely more on federal lands than any other state in the country. States like Texas are much more privately held, privately controlled, and New Mexico really relies on that that federal government, those permits. So interestingly enough, the administration has been less restrictive in some other ways. They've been giving permits out even while they said they were not. So it's just a lack of truthfulness as much as it is the number for the permits and what they've offered. So it's just funny, and you just roll your eyes and say, well, there goes another whopper of a lie out of this administration.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Well, Paul, some other things that we could talk about coming up in the next time or whatever. Senate Republicans successfully tabled House Bill or Senate Bill 171 on guns, and more on the CYFD stuff. So, but Paul, always a pleasure to talk with you. Put those rocks in your pockets and stay safe with that wind coming.
Yeah, I had a and I believe it would air tomorrow, I would think. Talk to Zach Ford with the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association.
Yes.
About where those gun bills are. We kind of run through all the different gun bills in the legislature and where they're moving or not moving and that kind of thing. So Zach is really smart. He's really on top of things. Rio Grande Foundation, of course, focuses on the economy, the education system, kind of your bottom line issues. Zach and the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, they're really focusing like a laser on the Second Amendment gun rights issues. So Zach is a very smart guy. So if you can't listen to it on your station, which I encourage people to do, they can go to tippingpointnm.com and check out that particular show.
And we will have that show on Thursday at 5 o'clock here on KHI and KEDU Radio. Paul, always a good conversation, and we look forward to our next one next Tuesday at 8:30. Until then, have yourself a great day, buddy.
Sounds good. Take care, buddy.
All right, you too, buddy.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.